This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this morning I'm joined by Bill Wagner, author of Effective C-Sharp and More Effective C-Sharp, and currently working on docs.microsoft.com. Thank you for taking time out of your morning, Bill.
Good morning, Brian.
For those of us who don't know you, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So, Bill Wagner, I do a lot of work in C-Sharp, wrote Effective C-Sharp and More Effective C-Sharp, which are just updated and in the process of being updated, and now spend my days working on .NET Core and C-Sharp documentation for docs.microsoft.com.
You also go around and give talks on the circuit. Is that fair to say?
Sure. I try to make as many user groups and local and regional events as I can, and a few national and international ones as well.
If people wanted to catch you, are there events around where you live or the region that are coming up in the next few months?
Well, let's see. Around here, I will probably be speaking in Portland at some point during the summer and fall. It's Portland, Maine, the Casco Bay .NET user group. There's a possibility of being in Boston. I will certainly submit talks for this fall's Boston Code Camp and this fall's Vermont Code Camp. For people, if you've got an international audience, I will be at NDC Sydney this August.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And those are most of the ones that are on tap right now, other than podcasts and the written word and blogs and such.
And to find your blog, what's the address?
TheBillWagner.com/blog.
TheBillWagner.com/blog.
Yes.
Got it.
Yep.
So today we're going to talk mostly about this new Microsoft .NET documentation project, which you're working on. So just to start off, what is it, the documentation project?
Right. So docs.microsoft.com is a new re-envisioning of all of Microsoft's technical documentation. So more than just .NET, over time you will see, as I said, all of the technical documentation will be there. We already have ASP.NET, some of the C++ documentation and Visual Studio documentation is there. Other teams will be onboarding as they are ready. And a lot of the idea behind this is, if you look at where MSDN is in terms of MSDN as a documentation platform, it was designed more than 15 close to 20 years ago. And that was a very different world. The idea of the web back then was paper, but on your screen. So everything was built around this idea of, it's just like your written stuff, but it's on your screen instead. The whole re-envisioning of the process, we really take into account that the web and online documentation is a totally different platform. Totally different presentation, totally different engine behind it, different way of us thinking internally about what good technical documentation and good technical learning materials really mean. And I think that's probably it in a nutshell.
So what spurred this change? Because, you know, it's been 15 years, someone has been happy, but someone has also decided that you needed to change how it was done.
Probably several things. You know, I think as a company, we want to constantly look at what we're doing and see if it is still relevant or if it should be updated. So I think it was, you know, what some of those reviews just that, wow, you know, this is getting old. This isn't what we would do now, you know, if we were to start from scratch. And it really isn't even close to what we would do now if we were to start from scratch. You know, just that kind of thing that we should do with all of our technology, to periodically review it, make sure it's still relevant, invest in change and innovation where we need to, and keep the things that are still good. So with that in mind, you know, that was the big push here, is that if you looked at what MSDN had, how it was organized, there were several things to address. In some ways, it was, you know, we had different developer centers, you know, the C-Sharp Developer Center, the VB Developer Center, you know, the SQL Developer Center, and so on and so forth. And a joke we made internally was that effectively we were shipping our org chart, right? So each different team had their own space for where they described how to do things. And that's not the way developers who are our customers are really thinking about this. They're much more thinking about solving the problems that they want to solve, which is going to grab and make use of things from all kinds of different product teams, right? If I'm building a website, I probably want to learn something about how to host it in Azure. I want to learn something about how to do effective database SQL and EF, because there's probably data somewhere behind this website. You know, maybe I want to see how to use RabbitMQ as as part of a microservices system. Maybe I want to understand how DocumentDB works behind my website. Maybe I need better async awareness because I'm distributing things among different machines, and so on and so forth. It's not just one silo of things they're trying to use. They're trying to build a system, and for us to organize the documentation correctly, they should be able to find scenarios that relate to what they're doing. Maybe not exactly the same, but at least gives them guidance around all the things we build that will help them with their scenario. So that's the idea of moving things all together.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's okay. I was going to say that's kind of the idea behind moving things together and try to get a lot more collaboration around teams and drive the content from a very different, more customer-focused angle.
You mentioned the word good, as in good documentation. Mm-hmm. Was there a feeling that the existing documentation wasn't good or just wasn't fit for the way people were using it?
I think the documentation also came from a different era, right? There's an example of, bad documentation, right? You'll see the things of, this is the sum method. What does it do? Well, it sums all the elements in the collection. Okay, just good API design already told me that, right? The name of the method being sum, S-U-M, tells me that it probably sums the items in the collection. What I need from documentation are the things that I don't get just from good API design. I want to know, well, do you cache results? When you enumerate the collection, is that thread safe? What are the performance characteristics of it? Are there, how best do I make use of this to be both accurate and perform well in my application? And that's just one example. But the idea behind this is, too often documentation at a method level describes just the API. And this is one of the platform things that we build, is we pull all the XML comments from the source for the .NET framework. But then we augment that with a lot of remarks that we write that aren't necessarily in the source code to be able to build larger scenarios, say how methods interrelate with each other, how to use a class in different scenarios, and do some of the things that you don't necessarily see just from the XML comments and turning those into HTML when you're building a library. And so that's one example. The .NET framework, by and large, is open source now. So developers can just go look at the source to get exactly what something does. And again, that puts different strains or says we want different things from documentation. If all we say is what they could learn from looking at the source, well, why not just look at the source? We have to provide that guidance that makes it easier to look at the big picture, look at some of the conceptual ideas, and make use of the whole framework as a package rather than, in the small, this method does this, this property stores that, and so on and so forth. So that's a lot of the reason behind it.
That's very impressive, the idea of giving me that information about thread safety or the examples of usage, because I have occasionally had to go into the source code either through what was provided by Microsoft or through something like a .peek and figure out, is this suitable? What's it doing when I really, really need to know the specifics of it? But I imagine it also poses challenges because you have to think of the scenarios people will use it in. And of course, I might use it one way and you'll use it a different way and someone else will use it a very different way. How do you deal with coming up with what are the common uses, but what are the important edge uses as well?
That's one of the reasons why I'm really happy our documentation is now open source for a number of reasons. So we certainly try our best to come up with different scenarios that people use, talk to customers. You know, anytime if you see me speaking at a conference, you know, I take notes of all the questions that I get, and that becomes input into things that maybe we need to describe better. And all of docs.microsoft.com, all of our .NET documentation, we're on GitHub. If you go to github.com/.net/docs, that's our home repo. You can see all the issues of things we're working on right now. Submit a new issue if there are things that are unclear. If there's something you want to write, you or any of your listeners want to write that you think isn't answered well, you know, create an issue for it, start telling us how you would want to cover it, and volunteer to tackle that issue, and we'll work with you to get the documentation written, get it onboarded, help understand all the engines that we have behind creating the docs site from source assets, and go from there. But that's, you know, we try to do our best, but we certainly want to listen to the community and anyone using .NET with areas that may not seem as clear as they should be.
I imagine it must be, or it will become, hard to keep it up to date. And obviously, having the open source aspect where people can contribute will make it that bit easier. But with regard to things like the C# team at Microsoft or the .NET team, the engineers building the languages and the components, is it part of their job now to keep the relevant piece of documentation up to date, or is it a different team?
That's going to vary by team. The C# team trusts me to write a lot of the public-facing documentation. They're also extremely helpful in making sure that I understand everything that's coming, everything that's already being built, to make sure I describe it well. Other teams may take more of an interest in writing. And to some extent, a lot of what I may do for new features is just take notes from the design meetings and from the reviews that the team does on new features and edit those and get them ready for publication on our site. You know, they're certainly writing a lot of things and going through a lot of scenarios for why do we want this new feature? When would we use it? How did it land this way? And I can go through all the notes on GitHub on their two repos. There's now a github.com/.net/C# lang repo that discusses proposals, enhancements, and changes to the C# language. And once those start getting implemented, it moves to the Roslyn repo, where discussion on the exact spec and exactly how it's going to get implemented in the current compiler take place. And between those two, then I can bring those two together and build samples and tutorials about any new features that are coming with the language.
So are you kind of the gatekeeper for a lot of the documentation at the moment?
No. We have a team that looks at everything there. So we basically use the PR model even internally. So for anything I write, I'll submit a PR for it, and one of my teammates or people on the C# team will review it. You know, so we make sure it gets a review from someone on the engineering side to make sure we didn't accidentally mislead customers. People on my team review it to make sure that it's, you know, any typos or any mistakes there, hopefully we catch. You know, and I do the same for other members of my team and read through anything that might be coming. So it's a team effort. I think we try to stay up to date as quick as we can on any of the PRs that are out there. I think we probably have more than we'd like right now. We're pushing 30 again. Because whether it's internal teammates or community members, you know, we want to respond in a timely fashion. We're recording this like 2 days before build, so it's a pretty busy time right now. But we usually try to get to reviewing anything within a day or two and keep it up to date as best we can. Keeping things up to date is an interesting challenge for us in that if you think about GitHub and managing branches and managing content, there's this idea of like, I can make a branch or a tag to mark a given release. Then we have to surface that eventually, and this is still in design, but we want to eventually be able to surface that on the site. So like, let's say you're still using Visual Studio 2015 and .NET, I think it's 4 or 5 at that point. You should be able to select something on the site and get documentation that pertains to the version you're using. You know, and we're working on that. That's still under design right now, and I think that'll surface later this year.
You mentioned cross-discipline, and you mentioned other technologies out there. How important has it become for Microsoft to start incorporating these third parties, the RabbitMQs, the whatevers?
Wow, that's I might not be the best person to answer all of those. So I'll talk about it just kind of from the doc standpoint and some of the things that we're doing. You know, everything, all of our documentation is built in Markdown. We're using DocFX to turn it from Markdown to HTML. There's some investments we've made on the site itself. We should definitely talk about samples and walkthroughs and code a little bit and how those relate to our docs. But I think a lot of that in terms of, you know, you mentioned RabbitMQ or Linux or, you know, our .NET Core investments on the Mac and so on, that has a lot to do, I think, with how computing devices are changing. You know, I don't know of anyone who every single device they have is made by the same company. You know, they're going to have maybe an iPhone, maybe an Android tablet. They might have Macs for that they're running Linux on, or a Windows PC, or, you know, a Windows Surface tablet, and so on and so forth. And what we're finding more and more is people want to be able to get their data and their information across all of those devices. Azure plays into this as well. If you look at the Azure support for things like Linux or any of these other platforms, other open source languages, other platforms as well, you know, or development stacks. And we need .NET to be able to compete in all those places as well. So I think there's a big idea of trying to be able to reach developers any place they have and incorporate .NET as, say, one part of the stack that they use. But that doesn't mean you have to pick every single thing from your persistence layer right on through your UI has to come from Microsoft.
I noticed one thing on the website as well that I think it might have been in the introduction to C Sharp, and it's probably the same across the other ones, that you could say, hey, I'm a something developer, a C++ developer or a Java developer, and I want to learn about C Sharp.
You know, we're still working on trying to make that experience better as well. And thank you. That's one of the things I added for the intro to C Sharp is, you know, that the way I would teach C Sharp to someone who's never programmed before is different than how I would teach it to someone who's coming from Java or someone who's coming from C++ or Ruby or some other language, right? You know, or JavaScript, say, is a very popular one now. You know, people have started doing some client-side stuff in JavaScript. They're comfortable there. And now they're moving to the server side, and they're looking at ASP.NET MVC. So they have some programming skills. They've seen these curly braces, and they think they know what everything means. And now C Sharp just looks really different than JavaScript. So how do I explain the idioms that you'd use there? Right. I mean, if you're a JavaScript developer, you probably don't write classes a lot because that's kind of clumsy and really misusing JavaScript as a language. You do a lot more functional style of things and a lot more thinking of an object and its properties and it's kind of that dictionary idea that comes with JavaScript. Now you enter C Sharp and you could probably make everything a dynamic expando object, but that's not good use of C Sharp, right? Any more than slamming everything into a class is a good use of JavaScript. So what we're trying to do there is try to reach developers where they're coming to us from and provide the right introduction to anything that they're learning.
you already have a ton of documentation out there, and a lot of it is still obviously very accurate, very useful. Are you planning to retire that, or what's going to happen to it? It'd be the easy question.
Right. So in time, docs.microsoft.com is going to be the platform for all the technical documentation. So some of that involves just migrating the things that are just plain correct. I mean, there's no reason to just throw away something that's good. We don't intend to do that. And that's a waste of everybody's time. We do intend to keep it fresh. So we have data for any topic that's on docs.microsoft.com. Our team gets reports on any topic that's more than 90 days old that gets significant traffic that maybe we should update and make sure it's accurate. So we continue to audit those things and update it as necessary. You know, in addition to writing about the new things that are coming out, I think that answered the question
Has something like Stack Overflow influenced your approach to this in the sense that when you talked about you will answer specific scenarios, you know, you should use this in a multi-threaded environment, you should be careful of using this in some other scenario, mm-hmm. because quite often when I'm searching for something, I really want the specifics of, is this the good approach in this way? And usually what comes up is Stack Overflow and a quick discussion of, No, don't use an IEnumerable, use an IQueryable because.
Right. I think we want to complement Stack Overflow. So Stack Overflow is a great Q&A resource and a very specific Q&A resource. So if I, you know, and I end up using it quite a bit as well. If I have questions, Stack Overflow is a phenomenal resource, and then I'm unstuck and I'm moving again. I want to think of Docs as more, in addition to being able to have some of that, I want Docs to be able to be a learning resource. You know, and that I think it's hard to go to Stack Overflow and learn a library or learn a framework because you're going to get very discrete answers to very specific questions. So I think we complement each other well, you know, and I think some of the Stack Overflow answers, hopefully you'll see pointing to topics on docs.microsoft.com in terms of getting more detail to a specific scenario and so on. But I think they complement each other, and I think they solve a slightly different purpose.
Oh, I completely understand. Yeah, because I'm coming at this with, you know, whatever, 12 years experience in .NET mm-hmm. at this point. So quite often I'm past the point of, oh, I need the beginning. But actually to that point, one of the things I've noticed with .NET, the previous .NET documentation and with a lot of stuff, Stack Overflow and the like, is the lack of good samples. I need to do something. Here's a snippet. Great. It's a snippet of code, part of a method, not a full method. I don't have my imports. I don't know what references. I don't know anything beyond that. And my own blog, I almost always include a full solution that a person can download. Even if it's only two lines I'm talking about, I almost always give you a sample that you can F5. And that's something I felt was deficient in Stack Overflow and in the Microsoft documentation.
So we do have an answer for that. And I think it's going to continue to evolve as we're learning. So the first part of the answer is that all of the snippets that go into docs.microsoft.com are taken from samples that get built. And as we continue to evolve more unit tests around any of our samples, the exception to those is there are times like, say, in the C# language samples where I say, if you write this, it doesn't compile, it generates this error. And because it generates an error, those don't get built in our CI build. So those are just inline. But for anything that it's like, if you write this code, this is what happens and it runs, that is part of a sample that is in our docs repository, gets built, and then as part of our build process for the documentation site, the code gets extracted and plugged into the site. Okay. It's actually the one use of regions that we like. If we mark the code in a C-sharp file or a VB file using region, then we include a named region into the docs. So I can get what we think is kind of the best of both worlds for from a reading perspective is here's the three lines you need to write, and here's the link to our GitHub repo where the full sample is, so you can download the full sample and see everything and run it. So we think we get both there quite well. And the nice thing there is if changes in frameworks or libraries means that the sample doesn't build, well, we'll see that in our CI builds and we'll then update the code itself, and that will automatically update what you see on the site for anything.
And that's great. And does that apply then as well if you're using a lot of third-party libraries? If for example, you were talking about RabbitMQ, mm-hmm. would there be enough in the Git repo that the person wouldn't right. need to do too much to get it all running?
You should be able to download everything and run it. There's a couple things that are noticeably larger projects, and the setup to make them run is going to be larger because of what they cover. Like one project I'm working on right now is an architectural guidance document for .NET and especially containers and Docker and so on. It's called eShop on Containers, and the full sample builds an ASP.NET website, a SPA website, Xamarin clients for all three of the phone platforms, phone and tablet platforms, several different microservices, a RabbitMQ store, a SQL Server store running in a container, and a Redis cache running in a container, all running in Docker in containers. So you know, we've got it so that the setup instructions are 2 to 3 pages. And I think that's about as close as we can get on something of that scale, right? It's going to say install Docker. It's going to say, you know, run these commands to build these containers or build these images and start these containers. But you can still build it and run it on either the Mac or your PC, Windows containers or Linux containers. On the Windows platform, on a Mac, you're only going to get the Linux containers, and so on and so forth. So as part of that reference application, we do have the wiki that describes everything you need to do. We want to build the smallest sample to cover what we're trying to cover. So other than this kind of sample, which is architectural guidance and microservices and building a large system, hopefully it's a lot simpler than that.
You mentioned walkthroughs. Are walkthroughs distinct from samples?
Yes, to some degree. We don't have a firm, clear separation here, but we have a few different things we look at. When we're doing some things we call snippets, which are just really small, almost syntax or guidance for just a member or a couple methods. Here's how you do one small thing, hopefully 5-10 lines of code, pretty straightforward. We have walkthroughs of smaller samples that maybe would take you an hour or two if you were going to type them in yourselves as you walk through, you know, reading the text, seeing what's been built, build it yourself. You know, we'd like to think that that's going to take an hour, maybe two at most, maybe half an hour for some of the smaller getting started samples. Then we might have a full tutorial that's going to take you quite a bit farther and maybe be a full day investment, right? And that one we would break up into different sections. But we're trying to get it so hopefully you can do things like, I want to know how to do REST clients. Okay, here's a sample walkthrough that you can do that will take about an hour, and you've built a REST client. Right? You know, something like that, where with that kind of investment, reading and following along, building the sample yourself, an hour and not much more, and you should be able to have not just your question answered, but have built something and see kind of how the parts work together, get the environment of the tools a little bit, and at least feel like you can go now build your own thing that's kind of like that.
This is a very kind of specific example that I've I'm going to ask about. There's this new cognitive services, or maybe not so new, on Azure. Mm-hmm. I was trying to do something with it a couple of months ago, specifically upload an MP3, and it was going to transcribe what was said and give me back a lovely text. My plan was to use it for our podcasts, but I couldn't find a good example. And the code was, it was this whole thing of snippets, and it was sort of, I don't have the time to figure it all out right now. So is there, as part of this greater docs project, can I make a request saying, look, I feel there's a deficiency in this particular thing. Could you please prioritize providing a sample or a walkthrough of transcribing MP3s using cognitive services?
You know, I think you could. I think, and so I don't work with cognitive services that much at all. It's something I really want to learn. But I am going to bet that if you looked for wherever the docs for cognitive services live, I think they're under Azure, but I'm not certain. And even in the intro there on any of our pages, actually, let me just answer this as a general one because I think it'll help people more. If you look at almost any of our pages, if you get to someplace and it's like, well, it didn't quite answer what I wanted, you should see up toward,
I see a little pop-up saying, is this page helpful? Yes, no.
Okay, so that's going to go into one place, which gives us some of our telemetry.
And I also see a comment section.
Right. And that's and the comment engine.
Five people listening. What does that mean, five people listening above that a comment?
That means five people have registered to get emails anytime somebody comments on that topic. Right. So if it's anything I wrote, I'm probably listening because then I know if somebody said something. If you go to the edit one, which you can get it just about.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. So Bill and I are walking our way through the docs, and now I ended up on a GitHub page.
Right. And now if you just go to the home for that repo, you can write an issue and say, geez, I really wish you would cover whatever. And maybe we should surface that a little bit better. And I think in some places we do in our contributing guides. But That is the best thing that I would do, and I can guarantee you that if you write an issue on any of the docs, somebody on the team will respond with asking for some help to clarify, helping to triage it and figuring out where it goes in the priority and so on within a couple days.
Yeah, because for me, I might not have the 5 or 6 hours it would take me to figure out how to, you know, include the right libraries, put in the right keys, put in this and that, but it's not that I can't do it. It's just that I prefer to have a sample that almost works.
Right.
And then I'll just swap the MP3s. I'll switch where the file's loaded from. Mm-hmm. I'll put in the right key, but I know where to put it in. What's too much work is the snippet in isolation.
Right. And I think, as I said, I think for anything that we build, you're going to see the snippets refer to a full building sample somewhere in our repo.
A slightly more general question. A lot of C# and .NET is open source, but are there parts still that are not open source?
Yes. I'm certain that I wouldn't have the full list of everything there, but yes.
Is there a reason why?
There are probably several reasons depending on each part of it. Some it may be on the list to eventually be open sourced and it's got to go through the entire review process. Mm-hmm. Some it may be strategically not going to be open source. And I don't know the answers to why in most cases. And some it may just be it hasn't bubbled up yet.
Because if I can use .peek, if I have the DLLs, you know, there are no secrets in the DLLs because I'll get it clear.
Sure.
It'll be, I'll even get the documentation, the internal XML. I don't understand why you wouldn't. I understand there's an overhead to doing it,
right?
But beyond the overhead,
there's overhead to doing it. There's reviews to do it. And there's strategic things in terms of some things may not get open sourced.
Okay.
Just for whatever reason. And again, I don't have the exact reasons there. I can speak a little bit to some of the review because it speaks to how with the .NET Foundation, we work with community projects. One of the things that you'll want to do with a community project is ensure that all of the contributions were made correctly and include things that came from places or are attributed to their original source. Okay. So here in some areas of .NET, some of the reviews are, let's make sure this code didn't come from a product we're not open sourcing, right? Because maybe two developers talk to each other. One is on the .NET team. Somebody else is on a team with a closed source product. We don't want to accidentally open source something that shouldn't be open sourced. So there are reviews to go through all of those things. And in general, I think a lot of it is just the reviews to make sure the comments are doing are correct, not making any negative things. You know, we've all seen source code that has comments that are fun to read, but probably shouldn't be stated publicly. And you know, some of that's even just slang and so on. You know, one thing we have in our documentation is samples, code, and text will go through a check to ensure that we didn't accidentally use something that could be offensive when it's translated. Because, you know, I have no idea what's negative slang in French, right? Or different Chinese languages and so on. So we look at things to make sure that, you know, this isn't going to be seen offensive by customers who see it translated into their native language.
Interesting, right? Considerations so, that I wouldn't think of because I just don't have to deal with it, of course.
Right. I this was new to me too. As things get translated into all these different languages.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your morning, Bill. Before we wrap up, any final notes?
Well, a couple things. In the opening, we mentioned that I've updated Effective C#. That was released in December of last year and updated all the guidance there to include everything up to and through C#6. I have just finished all the editing on an update to more Effective C#, which is currently scheduled to get released in August after it goes through final copy edit. And that includes everything that shows up in C#7.
Oh, nice.
And the biggest thing that we're interested in terms of docs.microsoft.com is we are really trying to make this a great resource for .NET developers, no matter where they're coming from. If they've been someone like you who's been using the platform for a decade or so, someone who's always been on Linux and other stacks, and you know, now that .NET Core runs on their favorite box, they're interested in learning. You know, we want to hear and listen to what challenges you have so that we address those. You know, visit docs.microsoft.com, visit the GitHub repo. It's github.com/.NET/docs. Submit any pull requests, write us issues, help work with us to make it better.
Fantastic. Bill Wagner, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Brian.
Up to be away from the thing, God, it won't stop till I let it all in. Up to be away from the thing, God, it won't stop till I let it all in. Up to be away from the thing, God, it won't stop till I let it all in. Up to be away from the thing, God, it won't stop till I let it all in. Up to she told me as I woke from walking asleep on the low one at night, she said, your feet are heavy, your feet stand deeper than you know, farther than you go, this wild mother. She told me one morning, right, child, you've got to run on my back, far. jump off that cliff. You let it in.
The opening music was The Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Let It In by Isla Nerio from the album Hollow Bone.